Good morning. If you have your Bibles with you this morning, I ask you to be turning to John chapter 15. And we will study a little bit from this passage of Scripture among some others this morning. We are grateful for your presence. It's summertime, so we're missing a lot of our folks, but we have a number of visitors with us today. And we thank you for taking the time to be with us. You're an encouragement to us. I hope that our worship and our efforts today will be an encouragement to you as well. Galen has already mentioned that we are, as August begins today, that's hard, man, it's hard to believe that it's August already, that we start a new topic to consider on and off throughout the month as we talk more about Jesus. And this month we're going to talk about Jesus in regards to his relationship to us as a friend. The memory verse is on the board behind me. I guess we can go ahead and start with this if you want to this morning. This is from John chapter 15 and verse 13. If you want to say this with me, greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. You know, the concept of friendship, I think, for every man and woman, to some degree or another, has a very special kind of connotation. It has once been said, no man is an island. And I think no matter how independent you are, no matter how isolated you tend to be, no matter how secretive or how much you play your life's events close to the vest, we all appreciate someone that we can share our life with on a kind of a closer level, a more intimate level than just a regular acquaintance. And I think everybody understands that concept. Everyone cherishes those relationships that we have in our lives. It is an aspect of life that everybody understands. It doesn't require a great amount of explanation or definition. The reality is the idea of a friend is just someone who you love in a little more special way. It is interesting if you look at the etymology of the term. Whether you look at English or Greek or Latin, all three of those, the word for friend is a derivative of the word for love. And so we all have people in our life that we love on a special level. Someone that we trust intimately, someone that we know very well, someone that we like, someone who feels those same things for us, someone that we enjoy sharing life with. And that kind of intimacy is not necessarily uncommon, but it is a difficult concept to think of that in terms of some people. I'm always impressed, for some reason, with people who are friends with someone who is exceptional. If you've been watching the Olympics and you've been watching the swimming at all, Caleb Dressel is the son of one of Tracy's friends that she went to college with. In fact, his grandparents worship with us once or twice a year. And for some reason or the other, when someone is exceptional, someone is famous, someone's a great statesman, someone who is a great delegate, someone who is a star because of their talents in the entertainment industry or athletic industry or maybe in academia, and you come to realize that people like that just have regular old friends. You know, I always look at that and go, man, it must be kind of weird to be a friend of someone who is so well-known or so famous or so exceptional. And yet, everyone has that and shares that. As you go through the Scriptures, there's a couple of interesting characters as we think about friendship on a level with someone greater. In the book of James, as James is talking about faith and works in James chapter 2, he uses Abraham as an illustration, and he makes the observation that Abraham was called the friend of God. And as you go back through the Old Testament, there are a couple of references, especially in the Psalms, to Abraham as being a friend of God. Now, have you ever thought about that and what that would entail? You know, my friends are folks that I'll go hunting with occasionally or fishing or maybe play golf or go get a hamburger, and we laugh and cut up and talk about stupid things and share, you know, the same kind of interests in our life. And friendship is a very, very casual, very close thing. And then I think about God. And for some reason or the other, in my mind, it's hard for me to envision the kind of intimate, close association with God and God with me that I have with people that I consider close friends. It's almost as if the holiness of God, the majesty of God, the glory of God, the power of God is beyond anyone's ability to have that kind of intimacy with. At least that's the way I tend to think of the idea of God. That God as a friend is an uncomfortable proposition in my mind. In the book of Exodus, in chapter 33, God, as he talks about Moses, I told you there are a couple of men in the Bible that are kind of exceptional in this regard as it comes to the relationship with God. Moses is another one that God describes as one with whom he will speak face to face. In fact, in the book of Numbers, when Moses' brother and sister, Aaron and Miriam, become frustrated with Moses because he has married an Ethiopian woman, and for some reason they think that that's, I don't know, disqualifies Moses. It's a hard concept to grasp what it is that they are so irritated about. But they become frustrated because God's speaking to him in different ways. And God rebukes them sharply and makes a point of saying, I will reveal myself to my prophets and my spokesman by dreams and vision, but Moses I will speak to face to face. He has seen my form. Clearly, when God thinks of Abraham and God thinks of Moses, he thinks of men on a level that he feels like he can have an association with beyond the norm. Do you see yourself that way? Do you see yourself as the kind of person that God could have an association with on such an intimate level that he could call you friend? It's a compelling aspect of the revelation of God that Jesus makes reference to the relationship with his disciples in John chapter 15 as those who are his friends. In fact, we're going to look at three or four verses specifically. John 15, beginning in verse 13, and I'm going to come back in a few minutes and talk about the context here a little bit. Jesus says in John 15 and verse 13, greater love, actually look at verse 12. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. You are my friends if you do whatever I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing, but I've called you friends, for all things that I heard from my Father I have made known to you. I want to talk with you a little bit this morning about this concept of Jesus as a friend. I appreciate the songs that Galen has sung. They already point us in the direction of those thoughts. And it is, for me anyway, one of the more difficult concepts about Jesus and the way he has portrayed us. It's one of the more difficult concepts for us, or at least for me, to wrap my head around. Because again, when I think of God, I think of Jesus, I think of a being that does not share my flaws, that does not share my weaknesses, that is not subject to my failings. And why in the world would God ever want to be friends with me? And I think as we look at that and then you think about Jesus and the things that he says to the apostles and how that relates to us, I think there's some real value for us to appreciate how God sees us on this level. So that's what I want to talk with you for the remainder of our time this morning. And I want to begin by just taking a little glimpse of how God describes friendship generally in the Scriptures, because I do think it plays into the idea as Jesus talks to his apostles. The Bible does not say a whole lot about friendship. If you are familiar with the Proverbs, you'll know that there are a number of Proverbs in the wisdom literature about friendship. But for the most part, you just have a little casual mention from time to time of people who share some special bond. Some of these examples that God gives us are very positive examples. Some of them are examples that are cautionary and help us to appreciate that the wrong friends, which Solomon does describe in the Proverbs, it does address, the wrong friends can be problematic. And so, put your bookmark in John 15, and I want to just run through several passages. We're not going to look at these in any grand detail. I'm going to try to summarize them, but I want you to know where they are. In the book of Genesis, chapter 38, Jacob's children are still, and Israel are still living in Canaan, and they're wandering through the land, we start seeing some of the reasons that God sends them off into captivity. And in chapters 37 and 38 of Genesis, we see the influence of the Canaanites upon the children of Israel. And again, in the big picture, I think God's trying to help us to understand that sending them into captivity in Egypt for 400 years probably saved them from Canaanite culture. And one of the stories we're told about is a story about Judah, one of the sons of Jacob. And Judah, we are told in verse 1, has a friend who is an Adullamite whose name is Hira. And as a result of this friendship, what happens as the chapter unfolds is that Judah is introduced to a Canaanite woman who he takes as his wife. They have three sons. The first two sons are very wicked men, so much so that in one of the more intriguing passages in the Bible, we're told that God killed them. Now, I don't know how. That's not the point of the lesson. What I do want you to see is this all unfolds as a result of Judah's friendship with this man who is not part of God's plans for his people. And this is also where these two sons, the first son marries a young woman named Tamar. The first son dies. The second son God kills because of his indiscretion. And then Judah does not want to save his third son for Tamar. If two of your sons marry the same woman, they both die, you'd be a little reluctant about giving your third one to her as well. And so this is where Tamar deceives Judah and bears children by her father-in-law, who, interestingly enough, become part of the lineage of Jesus in Matthew chapter 1. It's an interesting story, but the basis of the story is what happens when God's people become intimate friends with people that are ungodly. And I think that drives the story. It's an interesting inclusion. As you go farther ahead, you move over to the book of Job. Most people are very aware of the role that friendship plays in the life of Job. As Job begins, we're told about his godliness. We're also told that Satan is accusing God of building a hedge around Job. And the only reason that Job is faithful is because God is protecting him. And so God allows Satan to bring a series of disasters upon Job. And at the end of chapter 2, as Job is mourning the loss of his children, the loss of his property, the loss of his health, Job's three friends show up. And one of the more compelling pictures about friendship in Job is that they sit with Job for a week and don't say anything. They just sit there and mourn with him, which to me is an indication of great appreciation and friendship. And while they spend the rest of the book accusing him of things, it may well be as much as anything else, they're just trying to reason through what's happened. The friends of Job play an important part of the story. And it tells us somewhat about loyalty. Also tells us how friendship can be misdirected. But I do think these men have affection and appreciation for Job, and they are there for him at a difficult point in time in his life. Perhaps the most famous friendship story in the Bible is found in 1 Samuel, first of all, in 1 Samuel chapter 18. After David kills Goliath, and Saul takes David to become a part of his regular, household would be the way to say it, his regular service. And we're told in 1 Samuel chapter 18 about the friendship between Saul's son Jonathan and David. And we're told repeatedly, especially from Jonathan's perspective, which I find very interesting, that his soul was knit to David. On two different occasions, they make covenants with one another. Jonathan intercedes for David, even in regards to his own father and at his own risk. Saul tells Jonathan, "Do you not understand that your affection for David is going to cost you the throne?" And yet Jonathan, even while David is on the run, goes to David, encourages David. They make a covenant. He comes and tells David that you know, dad is not going to be appeased here. You're just going to have to leave. And at Jonathan's death in 2 Samuel chapter 1, or chapter 2, I believe it is, David offers, it is chapter 1, the very end of the chapter, David offers this wonderful litany and describes the relationship that he shared with Jonathan as a love that transcends even the love of women. And so it is a beautiful picture of loyalty and devotion and trust and the kind of relationship that seeks out the best of the object rather than its own. Then turn, if you would, to the wisdom literature, and let me offer a few observations about what God says specifically about friendship. First of all, in the book of Ecclesiastes, sometimes this little passage is overlooked. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, beginning in verse 7. Solomon says, "I returned and saw vanity under the sun. There's one alone without companion. He has neither son nor brother, and there's no end to all of his labors. His eyes not satisfied with riches, but he never asked, 'For whom do I toil and deprive myself of good?' This is vanity and a grave misfortune." Notice that Solomon begins what he's about to say by noting the absence of intimacy and how that can make life a misery. And immediately he says, "Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. If they fall, one will lift up his companion. Woe to him who is alone when he falls. He has no one to help him. Again, if two lie together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken." And how true it is that relationships in life help us to withstand difficulty, to stand up in the midst of trial, to bear burdens in a greater way. And those things are, those qualities are illustrated throughout what Solomon says in Proverbs. Very quickly, here are the Proverbs about friendship. Proverbs 12 and verse 26. "The righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the wicked leads them astray." Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 17. "A friend loves at all times. A brother is born for adversity." Chapter 18 and verse 24. "A man who has friends must himself be friendly, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." Chapter 27 and verse 6, and then a couple of verses later in verse 9. "Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Like a bird, ointment and perfume delight the heart, and the sweetness of a man's friend gives delight by hearty counsel." And then Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 17, "As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend." I'll tell you the picture that you get through the Scriptures. It's while friendship with the wrong person can lead us astray, friendship with the right person makes life, especially someone trying to serve God, makes life much more effective. The loyalty, the willingness to sacrifice, the willingness as iron sharpens iron to say things that are not comfortable because a friend is constantly looking out for the best interests of his friend. The consistency, the loyalty, all of those things that we value in friendship are things that God hails as He gives us records of friendships throughout history. Now I say all of that, and you may think, where are you going with this? Turn back to John. It's against this backdrop, and please remember that all of those things in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, those are God's words. It's not just Solomon, because Solomon had a good friend and thought, "This guy's pretty loyal, but he'll tell me what I need to hear, so iron sharpens iron. I think I'll write that down." This is the inspiration of God. These are the things God wants us to know. And I think in part God wants us to know those things because there's going to come a point in time where Jesus is going to offer this description at this place that impacts us, or at least it should impact us. In John chapter 13, and we just studied this recently, just a couple of weeks ago, we have the interaction between Jesus and the apostles on the night of his death. And I'm not going to go through all of it. If you just kind of run through the events, Jesus washes their feet after the the memorial, the institution of the Lord's Supper, Jesus has this discussion with them about following Him and loving as He has loved. As you get to chapter 14, and really throughout chapters 13 through 17, over and over and over, Jesus talks about the sacrifice that He's going to make for them. He focuses upon the love that He has for them. He tells us repeatedly that He came from God. He's going back to God. So He reminds us of His identity as God, that He is the Lord, the Master, the Teacher, the Way, the Truth, the Life. And He tells us over and over, tells them how much concern He has for them. Now that kind of summarizes those chapters. And in the midst of it, in chapter 15, we have a very familiar section where He begins with, "I am the true vine and My Father is the vine dresser." And I think this grows out of verse 31 in the last chapter. It's not without its own context. "The world may know that I love the Father. As the Father gave Me commandments, so I do. Arise, let us go from here." I'm doing what I'm about to do to show My intimate relationship with God. Please get that. Because that's when He says, "I'm the vine, My Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in Me that does not bear fruit, He takes away. Every branch that bears fruit, He prunes that it may bear more fruit. You're already clean because of the word that I've spoken to you. Abide in Me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in Me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in Me and I in him bears much fruit. Without Me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in Me, he's cast out as a branch and withered. They gather them and throw them into the fire and they are burned. If you abide in Me and My words abide in you, you will ask what you desire and it will be done for you. By this My Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, so you will be My disciples. As the Father loved Me, I have loved you. Abide in My love. If you keep My commandments, you will abide in My love, just as I've kept My Father's commandments and abide in His love. These things I have spoken to you, that My joy may remain in you, that your joy may be full. This is My commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down his life for his friends. You are My friends if you do whatever I command you. No longer do I call you servants. A servant does not know what his master is doing. I've called you friends, for all things that I heard from My Father, I have made known to you." I'm going to ask you something. As we read through that, or maybe just from your previous experience with John chapter 15, what do you see as the point Jesus is making in the vine and the branches analogy? My suspicion is that most of the time what we focus on, and I may be wrong, I hope that I am in your case, but I think most of the time what we focus upon is the idea of fruit bearing. Is that right? Is that what you think of when you see this passage? You know, "You're My disciples if you do what I say. God's glorified if you bear much fruit. I want you to go bear fruit or God will cut you out of the vine." And so we look at this and immediately that's what we think. Do you appreciate that there's a concept that's much more prevalent here than fruit bearing? You see what it is? It's abiding. I am doing My Father's will. I'm abiding in His love. You're abiding in Me. I'm the vine. You're the branches. How many times does He say, "Abide in Me and I in you. Abide in My love. My love will abide in you. Abide in Me by doing My commandments. I will abide in you. My joy will abide in you." Over and over and over, it's about a relationship. And it shouldn't therefore come as any grand surprise that when you get down to verses 13 and 14 and 15, And He's already underscored love and sacrifice, and yes, I am God, but you abide in Me, and I'm going to abide in you, and I'm always going to be with you, and I'm giving you an example, and I've washed your feet, and I've served you, and I want you to serve Me. This relationship manifests itself in these words of familiarity. "Greater love has no one than this, that one would lay down his life for his friends." He tells them that on the very night He's going to lay down His life. And while we understand Jesus lays down His life for everyone, and they came to understand that, do you know what He's telling them right then? Right then what He's saying is, "I'm going to die for you." And He did. And they were the first ones to need the forgiveness of God. Peter denies the Lord at the very hour of his trial, is he not the first one, if he's going to go preach the gospel, to need the forgiveness of God? And yet Jesus wants them to understand, this is where my friendship to you, this is where I show you my abiding. And I want that from you, which is the reason I think he says in verse 14, if you do whatever I command you, you're my friends. I'm already doing what God has commanded me relative to you. I'm making sacrifice for you because of my affection and my love for God and for you. Now you can reciprocate that. And then finally in verse 15, and I'll tell you just how the difference between you being servants and you being my friends, I'm telling you what's going on here. That is what you do with friends, isn't it? You share. I'm telling you what's happening before it happens. That's what friends do for one another. Well, I find that all exceptionally intriguing, because I think all of this is intended to help us to appreciate that what God offers to us and what God wants from us is the kind of intimacy that can say, me and God, we're right here. Me and the King of the universe, we're right here. Me and the Messiah, we're right here. The Creator of the world, we're right here. Pick your description. And I think that's hard for us. I think it had to be hard for the apostles, especially as they came to understand just who Jesus was. Notice in verse 16, I think it's an interesting kind of conclusion to the thought, you didn't choose me, I chose you. Well, so what? Let me offer two so whats to you. And we'll be finished. And I want this to be kind of an introduction for us to think about some of these things and where they lead us over the next month as we think about this kind of intimate relationship that we have with Jesus and that He wants us to understand. And the first is that Jesus is the ideal friend that you find described throughout the Scriptures. I mean, in this passage, he talks about his sacrifice. He talks about the fact that he wants them to obey. And we don't normally associate, I want you to obey, with friendship. You know, you're only my friend if you do what I tell you to do. That's awfully narcissistic, selfish. But understand the concept, the context in which Jesus says that. I've already done that for you. And that is true of friendship. I do for you what you need and what you want. You do for me what I need and I want. All Jesus is doing is offering the fact that friends reciprocate trust and love and concern and even rebuke when it is necessary and when it's in its best interest. Jesus fulfills all of the concepts, all of the principles that you find throughout the Bible that is indicative of what friends really are. A good influence, strength in the midst of difficulty, help and association at all times, loyalty, trust, counsel, honesty, a betterment of us. All of these things God is exercising toward me and toward you in our lives. And we need to see that. It goes back to the old ball and chain. If this is Christianity to you, then you don't know God. You miss John 15 and the whole abide in me and I'll abide in you concept. So I want you to appreciate at the very outset that Jesus is offering to us this kind of relationship. And then here's the second thing. I think it's important that we understand that this is how Jesus sees us. More than servants. More often than not, when we talk about this, we think about Jesus thinking of us as family. You're my sons and daughters. As he says in Matthew chapter 12, when his mother and his brothers are trying to get to him, and someone told him, "Hey, your mother and brothers are out here, and they're trying to see you." And Jesus points to the people around him and says, these people that are doing the will of God, these are my brothers and my mother and my sister. And we, more often than not, when we think about that, we think about being the family of God, especially being the children of God. And that is a wonderful image, and I believe it is a true image. But you remember the proverb that says there's a friend that sticks closer than a brother? Man, how often do we think about Jesus as being more than family? That's the way He sees me. It is hard for me to see myself as the object of that kind of affection and concern by Jesus. And yet, that's what Jesus wants us to get. With all of our flaws, with all of our failings, with all of our miscues, with all of the trouble, with all of the difficulty, with our weaknesses and our loss of faith, our strengths, our everything that happens to us in our life. And none of us are consistent. But Jesus wants us to understand that He still sees us with that kind of loyalty and affection and concern. And that is powerful. What it says to us is He has an intimate interest in us. That's what He's telling the apostles throughout this section. And what that should say to us, and I want to finish with this because I think it's exceptionally important. Reciprocation on our part. How do we show the same friendship, for lack of a better term, toward the Lord? I mean, Hebrews says that He ever lives to intercede for us. He has our best interests at heart 24/7. He's always looking out for us, making sure that no temptation has taken us, but such as is common. And there will be a way of escape. All of these things that we know that God does for His people, Jesus does as an act of friendship and love, not just because, well, I'm the king and this is the job God has given me to do. We're not just servants, and we're not just family. We are people that He loves. So how do you reciprocate that? Have you ever thought about the need of obedience as indicative of the regard that we have for God? I mean, I think that's where maturity spiritually should lead us anyway. And I hear people that get frustrated about the concept of obedience, and you talk to people in the big religious world out there who are all enamored with the idea of God's grace and that we don't have to do anything and that there are no works. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. If you only think of obedience in the sense of earning something, then you have completely missed the point of obedience. Obedience to God is the greatest indication of love that we can show. We can say to God all day long in our heart, "Oh, I love you, God." But if we're out living in ways that are not godly, we are not showing love to God. And that's why Jesus says, "I call you my friends and you are my friends if you do what I command you to do." Because that is the greatest indication of love and friendship. Is it not with your friends? If you have a friend that's inconsistent, a friend that is never willing to make a sacrifice for you, never willing to give you the benefit of the doubt, never willing to stand up for you, never willing to go to any effort in order to maintain the kind of affectionate feelings and trust that you have for one another, how long is that person going to stay your friend? Well, why would Jesus say, "You're my friends. I love you. I'm sacrificing for you. I'm giving for you. I'm interceding for you. I'm doing everything because of the way that I see you and the way that I want you to see me. I'm trying hard to abide in you. All I'm asking is that you be the same kind of friend that I am." Now, folks, if that doesn't motivate us in regards to loyalty and obedience, even in the smallest things, I don't know what will. I ran across a quote from a man named Lermontov. Some of you may be familiar with his writing. He makes an interesting observation about friendship. What he says is, "Of two close friends, one is always the slave of the other." That's a pretty good description. We're always serving the people that we love. And they're always serving us back. Because that's what friendship does. It is a valuable commodity. And it's a challenge, I think, because of the intimacy involved to see God, to see Jesus in those terms. They're almost too familiar for me. And yet, on the very night of his death, one of the very last things that Jesus tells his apostles is, look, I can't show you my love for you any more than to lay down my life for you, because that's what friends do. And I'm asking of you that you reciprocate the kind of concern for my will that I have for your best interests, because I am God, I'm the master, I'm the teacher, I'm the Lord, but you're not my servants anymore. That's not the way I think of you. You are my friends. And indeed, what a friend we do have in Jesus. And may God help us to come to that kind of appreciation of our relationship with Him. I think it helps us, folks, to be better servants and better children of God. Thanks for your attention. Hopefully those will be some things we can think about as we go through the rest of the month. If you're subject to the invitation this morning, if you've never named the name of Christ, if you have and maybe you've fallen away and you're not being faithful anymore and it's hard to say that you're abiding in Him, one of the qualities of friendship is friends always forgive. You can always come back. If you've never obeyed the gospel and need to do so, if we could help you in any of those regards, we invite your response while we stand and sing.